This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is out today. But in the news this week, the cut and thrust of Massachusetts politics. First, Senator Scott Brown objects to mailing voter registration forms to thousands of welfare recipients.
It's like another thing that you just shake your head about. I think it's outrageous.
While Democratic challenger Elizabeth Warren backs off her demand to see more of Scott Brown's tax returns.
She probably pushed a little farther than her advisors wanted her to push.
Meanwhile, in the race for the 6th Congressional District, a fierce tit-for-tat between Representative John Tierney and his Republican challenger, Richard Tesei.
For John Tierney to be going after my parents about things that happened 10, 15, 20 years ago shows you how desperate he is.
Also this week, alleged mobster James Whitey Bulger decides to take the stand in his own defense.
He wants the opportunity to speak the truth to everyone.
And following the tragic mass shooting at a Wisconsin Sikh temple, how should you react if faced with an active shooter?
Run, hide, fight.
That's according to a video sent out by Boston University Police. We'll talk about that and much more in our Week in Review today. And joining me to do so is Peter Canellos, Deputy Managing Editor for the Boston Globe and editorial page editor, I should say, as well. Peter, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
I keep shifting around your title. Is it a promotion or not?
That was about 5 years ago. I'm the editorial page editor now. That's
yeah.
Good.
Given that we have actually properly said your title a lot, you can tell it's been a long week for me. But moving on to our other guest today is WBUR's senior reporter, David Bowery. Great to have you in, David.
Hi, Megan. And if anything big happens right now, I need a spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Okay. Well, we'll flash the big graphic across the screen. Well, no spoiler alerts here because we're going to start with the Senate race, which, of course, has not yet been decided. But the politics in it is really heating up because this week, Senator Scott Brown accused the state of Massachusetts of going, quote, above and beyond what was necessary when it spent almost $300,000 on a mass mailing of voter registration forms to welfare recipients. Here's Scott Brown's reason why he objected to that.
It's not about getting people out to vote. It's the fact that Professor Warren's daughter is leading the charge at taxpayer expense, getting out the vote for a mom. It just smells wrong. It's wrong.
Now, Senator Brown was referring to the fact that the State Department of Transitional Assistance sent out those mass mailings in response to a lawsuit brought against the state by the advocacy organization DEMOS, whose chairman of the Board of Trustees is Elizabeth Warren's daughter, Amelia Warren Tyagi. So, Peter, first question to you. Is this as big a deal as Scott Brown is saying? I mean, today he asked that the Warren campaign pay back that almost $300,000. What's the bigger overreach here?
It's Brown's overreach. I mean, the conspiracy theory that he's alleging that Warren's daughter is doing this to help her mother is really not proven. This is a group that has made these kinds of suits based on a federal law that requires that voter registration information be included at public benefit offices. And they've sued many states. They've done it since 2004. It happens that Warren's daughter is the chairman of the Board of Trustees, but there's no suggestion that they intervened in Massachusetts just to help Elizabeth Warren.
And David, your thoughts?
And yet, as the Herald reports, no other state has sent out letters and registration cards like Massachusetts did with the 500,000 letters. So the story can't quite be killed. But agreeing with Peter, I mean, this is one sad summer series. We're looking for the fall season and desperately looking for some substance in the fall season. Although, you know, Scott Brown is a fabulous campaigner. He's well-liked. He's running as the challenger, and he really does project this earnest sense of being a victim.
Peter, do you agree with that? Because that was a big question on my mind. It seems like this is one issue that's just a gigantic red herring for what? I mean, and what does it say about the nature of the campaigns, both of them so far?
Yeah, I think that's actually a very true observation by David that, Brown is doing this to try to show that he's the one who's running up against the establishment, that there are all these Democrats out there that are trying to load the dice for Elizabeth Warren. You know, if you really want somebody who's in touch with the people, it's me, Scott Brown. The danger for him is that when he comes out in his own voice and starts challenging somebody's daughter, he also did it with her Native American, describing herself as a Native American at Harvard. He risks undermining something that people also like about Scott Brown, that he's very likable and low-key and doesn't seem very political. I mean, that clip that you had earlier sounded a little angrier than we've heard him, certainly on any issue. You know, it seems like he was quite he was quite exercised, and I don't know that that helps him too much.
But we got to go to Elizabeth Warren here, who seems to be a much better campaigner than her campaign. There have been numerous mistakes here, and I go back to wondering what happened to the initial Elizabeth Warren. And whether this campaign needs to let Elizabeth Warren be Elizabeth Warren. I mean, the reason she got into this race, the reason she is the candidate, is because of her enemies. Her enemies defined her and made her popular as to what she did. She started off saying that she was a rock thrower, and now she's backed off of that. And, you know, it was what happened on Wall Street, as well as Obamacare, that fueled all those Tea Party activists. When I followed her on her first day out in Worcester of the campaign trail, there was a guy in a bar, and he said, I have a check for her. He came. He said, I've never voted for Democrats, but I know this. I hate banks, and the banks hate her. That's why I'm supporting her. And she seems to have lost that initial identity.
But, you know, you may be reflecting, David, that Brown has been successful in knocking her off of that a little bit. But her own actions, her own speeches, her own time on the campaign trail, she's relentlessly stuck to that focus, you know, perhaps to a fault. You know, she hasn't emphasized other issues enough. I mean, you know, consumer finance and consumer rights, you know, that's been her dominant focus. So I don't think that it's a mistake in her campaign. It may be the success of Brown in kind of changing the conversation a little bit.
Well, let's talk a little bit about a little more of what David said about when the campaign does allow Elizabeth Warren to be Elizabeth Warren, because that was the source of a particular, let's call it a stumble that she made this week, because earlier this week, she basically demanded that Senator Scott Brown release many more years of his tax returns, essentially the number of years equal to the time he's been in public service. She said this at a campaign event. We've got a little tape of it. It's a little hard to hear, but here she is.
I think Scott Brown should release his tax returns for all the years that he's been in public service. He's been in public service for 20 years, then he should have 20 years of tax returns.
So she demanded 20 years of his tax returns, and then very quickly, a day later, backtracked from that, saying that's not really what she meant. David, I take your point about Elizabeth Warren's initial reason and entire purpose for being in this campaign, but we have seen these stumbles in terms of her as a budding politician.
Right. Small correction. She actually didn't. They should have allowed her to take it back, but the campaign took it back. And one of the reasons, of course, was because she had released 4 years of her tax returns as opposed to the six that Brown had released. And so they come back and they correct her rather than letting her walk it back. And it's sort of, this is why there's this seeming disconnect, and they don't want her to do anything that might be risky.
Mm. I might add that when I first heard that, it seemed to me that she was saying Scott Brown, but she meant Mitt Romney. It seemed pretty clear when she was saying that she just flubbed the name. She probably, you know, does 1,000 events a day and mentions Scott Brown all the time. And it, you know, she just mentioned the wrong name. But I'm surprised that she didn't come out and say I was talking about Mitt Romney.
Which gets back to David's point of maybe the disconnect between her and her campaign. I do wonder, Peter, this was a question for you. There seems to be a lot of political smoke and mirrors going on right now. Is it just August? And are we going to get back to the issues in terms of what we're publicly hearing the candidates talk about come September, knock on wood?
Well, I think that this has not been. Are you talking about the presidential election or the Senate
election?
Well,
I'm talking about the Senate election, because it seems like all the heat right now is over these basically non-issue oriented bits of politics.
Yeah, I think that's definitely depressing and disappointing. I do think that the two big distractions, this one about the welfare recipients and the previous one about Native Americans, came from Senator Brown, and they had a. You know, a clear intent to try to change the public image of Elizabeth Warren. But by and large, they've stuck to the no outside group advertising, which has been a huge boon for the public, maybe not for media organizations, but it's been a huge boon for the public. And their own advertising, we just looked at their latest ads, does emphasize issues. So, you know, we and the media and the media generally, you know, need to buckle down ourselves and pay attention to some of the substance that's going on.
Media, heal thyself. I hear that call. Let's move on to another race, and that's for the 6th Congressional District and the intense contest between Representative John Tierney and Republican challenger Richard Tesei, because this week, John Tierney attempted to shift the focus off of his own family's financial and legal problems, when he and the Massachusetts Democratic Party accused Tissay of collaborating with his parents on a questionable real estate deal. First, here's Representative Tierney.
I find it the height of hypocrisy, actually, that he spent all this time trying to bang away at my wife and her family on that when apparently he was harboring all this information about his family's fraudulent practices and his involvement in it.
Richard Tissay called that gutter politics on the part of the Massachusetts Democrats. Here he is.
For John Tierney to be going after my parents about things that happened 10, 15, 20 years ago shows you how desperate he is.
David, the act of a desperate Democrat?
Well, you know, this is a case that, I mean, the question here, I guess, is did Tissay do the same thing Tierney is accused of doing by Tissay? So it's like the mirror on the mirror. And the Democrats have clearly decided that Tissay needs his own version of a scandal. So here it comes. Now they have their own website. And it's interesting. I love the line from the Democratic Party spokesman here, Kevin Frank, who, by the way, has come up from Louisiana politics now to work for the Democrats in Massachusetts. He says, well, cry me a river, Mr. Tissay. The guy has spent months slinging mud at Representative Tierney's family, and now that the truth is out about him, he's whining about getting dirty. Maybe the lesson here is that you have a, if you have a glass jaw, you shouldn't step into the ring. I mean, this is, it's foolishness. But the question is Tissay an even small way doing what he's accused Tierney of? I don't know. Read it. I have to put this in the context. This is in the same week that we've had an infestation of rats, sharks, eastern equine encephalitis, and a rabid woodchuck. So put it into that context.
Rabid woodchuck politics, Peter. This is also the congressional seat where it seems, Democrats stand the greatest risk of losing to a Republican.
They do. And Richard Tissay is an appealing candidate with a moderate voting record and an interesting message. That's why it's very discouraging that this congressional race, much more than the Senate race, I think the Senate candidates have behaved by and large okay. This congressional race has been a disaster. And, I think that Tissay would do well trying to change the conversation from Tierney's misdeeds. I mean, the reason, as David is correct, that Tierney's throwing this out there as a way of trying to tit for tat over the scandal involving Tierney's wife and her very serious activity on behalf of her brother and his illegal gambling ring. But enough of that. You know, people can process the Tierney scandal. They've been through it. It's been all, chewed over. Let's have some actual debate in that.
Exactly.
About issues in that race.
The budding cynic in me thinks it's time for Massachusetts politicians to maybe respect the intelligence of the voters whose vote they are requesting. But moving on to issues of respect, maybe, let's talk a little bit about alleged mobster James Whitey Bulger. Now, Mr. Bulger says he's going to take the stand in his own defense, and his attorney, J.W. Carney Jr., announced that this week. Let's listen.
He wants the opportunity to speak the truth to everyone about why he was able to spend 30 years allegedly committing a whole host of crimes and was never indicted until the 90s.
So, David, you have been following this story incredibly closely. Is taking the stand in his own defense Bulger's best shot at, maybe getting an acquittal or telling a story, as Carney says?
The reality here is that Bulger's a dead man walking. It's like, okay, what's your defense? I mean, they have a case against him. And having such a solid, solid case against him, the question is, why would anyone want to jeopardize that process? You know, all along, and this gets to the judge, the question of the judge himself. I mean, the context of this story from the start is suspicions and doubts of government, because all along people have thought the fix was in. When after he took off and Flemmy, his partner, was arrested, the government fought against the disclosure that they were secret FBI informants. They ran a fugitive hunt that was either unenthusiastic or incompetent. People thought they were hiding him out there. All this suspicion and doubt. And now when you have the trial judge, who turns out to be a very close friend of the FBI director, is there a reason? Are there doubts and suspicions that warrant him being extra sensitive and perhaps taking himself out of the case? That's the question.
Peter, do you have a thought on how that question might be answered? I mean, David has reported this week on WBUR about all those reasons why some believe that Judge Richard Stearns, should recuse himself, and yet that doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, that was a good piece, and I think David makes a good point when he says, this is such a high profile case, and you may want to bend over backwards to prevent the defense from having any sort of an issue. The one problem here is that we have to know that at the state level and the federal level, all of the judges come out of a legal background. They've been in law firms. They've represented clients. They've worked in prosecutor's offices. A lot of them have worked in prosecutor's offices, and a lot of them have had a lot of colleagues there. So the question in terms of the relationship between Rick Stearns and Bob Mueller, the director of the FBI, is, yes, they were friends, and yes, they worked together. Are they such good friends and so closely allied that it creates an inherent conflict? And probably by normal legal standards, the answer is no. But again, David makes a good point that in one of the most high-profile cases that'll ever face the FBI and the Justice Department, maybe they should be a little careful.
Well, the test is there an appearance? Might a reasonable person, defined by the Supreme Court as JQ public or a skeptic, think there might be a question of partiality? And that's a low standard that's set deliberately by Congress and the Supreme Court, Peter, to deal with those suspicions and doubts. And, nobody is arguing for Bulger, because the great problem here would be at the end of this process, if a judge's refusal to recuse were to result in that whole case and the verdict being overturned. And then where are you?
Hmm. Well, we'll continue to follow this through your excellent reporting, David. But before we run out of too much time, we've got just enough seconds left for our weekly hubbub. And Peter, let me start with you. What's your hubbub for this week?
my hubbub is somewhat local and somewhat national. It's about the Papa John's pizza claiming that it'll cost 11 cents more per pizza when you call in and order a pizza to cover the cost of Obamacare. And obviously the CEO, who is a strong Republican fundraiser, thinks that's outrageous. But I think that, it's done a public service to actually put a price tag on what it costs to give people health benefits. And I think most of the public will say 11 cents a pizza. That's what it comes down to. And we'll go for it. So maybe Papa John's is playing a role in changing the healthcare debate a little bit. So
one could say that 11 cents may be all the pizza's worth. But moving on, David, your hubbub.
Spoiler alert. Now, riddle me this. We are a news and information program, a station here. So why are people listening to us if they don't want to hear the news? And we tell them, spoiler alert, turn your radio off. Think about this. Riddle me what is going on in the world of social media, where people, even news reporters, even Twitter from funerals, for God's sakes. And now it's like, spoiler alert, you know what? There's a shark in the waters off the Cape. Oh, don't tell me. I want to see the video. Give me a spoiler alert. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it's really bugging me.
But I know some people who care a lot about the Olympics and still love the surprise, David. Maybe we're just reaching a world where you have to run around with your fingers in your ears and say, la, 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 I didn't hear that. Well, what I didn't hear or didn't want to hear is my hubbub this week, and that is a story about those rats in the Fenway area. I just have to read this quote from the Globe, where foot-long rats, hordes of them, at least 100, scampered in and out of burrows, crawling into garbage cans, brawling, squealing, and scuttering over a gentleman's loafers. Now, the Fenway area has had a wonderful resurgence over the past several years. It's a great neighborhood. Rats, do yourselves a favor. Save yourselves from those exterminators, and maybe there's a better place for you. But straight out of 1984 for me. That is my hubbub. Peter Cannella.
There's a place for us. I like ending on that, Magna.
Peter Cannella's editorial page editor of the Boston Globe. Thanks so much, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Magna.
And David Boyer, WBUR's senior reporter. Always great to have you in here, David.
Thanks a lot.
Well, stay with us, because coming up, we're going to talk about how Boston is changing and what that means for our local small restaurateurs. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.